They want me to get rid of my dog. Can I do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Sue Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
A service of Fairfax Public Access and Cox Communications.
94.5 Cable FM.
Cox Cable Channel 37.
Comcast Cable Channel 4.4.47.
Broadcasted to the world in real audio at FCAC.org.
WBR-FM Fairfax.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons, and I'm Sue Bartholomew, and I am very thrilled and pleased to have my favorite legislator of all time on the show with me today, Representative Julio Rabina from sunny Florida. Hi, Julio, and thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for the invitation, Sue. We appreciate it.
Well, Julio, you've been busy. We've got a bit of an echo here. You've been busy this year.
Extremely busy. We've had an interesting last session, and we're getting ready to go into another very interesting session this year in Tallahassee, Florida. But I also just like to thank you for the opportunity to speak about what we're doing here in Florida, because I think it becomes a model for what they do in other states. So we'll have a lot to talk about during this program.
Well, one of the things, Julio, that I think, and I think you're brilliant for suggesting this, and I want to thank you for doing this. I know it didn't pass this year, but you had a bill, a proposed legislation that would free up some funds that's being paid for by the homeowners themselves to train law enforcement to go in and enforce the laws.
That is correct. What we're doing is we had actually the money allocated and everything in our budget here in the state of Florida. Unfortunately, the governor vetoed the funding. And, you know, I like to tell it like it is. The bottom line, it was probably a lot of it special interest behind calls to the governor's office to veto the funding that would have created what we call the pilot program. But the good thing is, even though the governor vetoed it, we were still able to convince our local state attorney and all the local law enforcement people in our county. I live in Miami-Dade County, and we're still working on this pilot program. We should be off the ground hopefully in the next 30 to 45 days. But what it was is it's just the enforcement leg of laws. I mean, we can pass all the laws in the world that we want, but if we don't have an enforcement leg where people can call if there are things that have done that may be somewhat of a criminal nature, or, you know, that may create a situation where money is missing from accounts, we really didn't have structure. And I think that a lot of states don't have structure on how the enforcement arm would come into play if somebody found themselves in this type of situation. So we've already laid out the guidelines, and let me just tell you what the way it works here in Dade County is. In our county, we have 37 municipalities. What does that mean? We have one large county and then 37 little cities underneath the county with their own governments, with their own police departments, with their own detectives. Well, what we're doing with this pilot program is that we are creating a training session to bring all of the detectives that work for all these different police departments to a training session that will be done by the state attorney's office, at the agency here, which is called the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and also the state that regulates condominiums. And it will be under basically the supervision of the condo ombudsman's office, which I know we're going to talk a little bit about.
Yeah, we are.
And they'll be actually supervising the program. And what the first thing is to train local police departments so that when people have a problem and they say any kind of problem that they think there might be, anything that might be illegal, possibly of malicious intent, or that might be of criminal nature, money missing from the funds of an association, they will be able to call their local police department. They are going to all be trained in how to find probable cause. And then the next step will be, if the local police department finds probable cause, then the state attorney's office will jump in and charges will be filed. And the next step, of course, as you know, would be taking it forward to prosecute people that are involved in this. This is not so much just for board members that may be acting illegally, but we're also targeting the property management companies, the CAMs, and anybody else that would, you know, fall into this type of predatory situation. And we, believe it or not, with all the laws we have in the state of Florida, we really didn't have structure on how law enforcement came into play, and that's something that, like I said, we should have this off the ground. We should have the detectives being trained within the next 30 to 45 days. So that means before the end of this year, we should have a pretty good system running here where people can call and they'll have somebody who will follow up on any type of these predatory situations.
Let me ask you, I'm a little bit confused here, Julio. I thought the governor vetoed it, but yet you sound like you've got this program up and running and it's going to happen.
We're going to make it happen without the state's money and the governor's veto.
Oh, so you're just going to do it in Dade County.
Here's the thing. The money that we were going to get would probably been able to kick it off the ground. But, you know, we need to set some type of example of whether these programs work or not. So instead of sitting back and waiting till next year's session and trying it again, what we did is, after the governor vetoed it, we went directly to our state attorney and said, you know, this program that we had spoken about, unfortunately the governor's vetoed the funding, but is there any way that we can still put it together here locally in Dade County, and we'll try to work the budget issue where everybody absorbs a portion of the cost. And the need is so large here in Dade County that everybody said, yes, let's go ahead and do it here locally. We don't have the funds to do it county by county or statewide, but let's get it off the ground here. So we really, you know, may have skipped a beat for 30 days or 45 days when we had to deal with the funding no longer being allocated, but we're still moving forward with the process and the concept, thanks to the help of the state attorney's office. Again, the state, the division that regulates condos, the ombudsman's office help, and the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and a couple of other great people that we've been working with, volunteers that have pushed to make this a reality. So that shows that if you really put the effort behind it, I don't care what kind of roadblocks are thrown in front of you, you can still move forward.
We're talking to State Representative Julio Robina. Julio, in a former life, I used to be a nurse, and we had a saying at the hospital that said, where there's a pill, there's always a way. And that saying kept coming back as I'm sitting here listening to you. Now, I've always admired you, and you know that. You have gone up a million times in my estimation, and I didn't think that was possible. You know, you've taken... You know what's right, and you found a way to make it work, and thank you.
Well, sure, this is something that, as elected officials, you're talking about people's homes, housing, and living in what I call these condo commando environments, you know, these little countries with their own rules, and it's wrong. And remember, government's function is to protect people, especially when they're being abused. So that is one of my responsibilities. It's just very sad that right up there with education and health care, the issue of housing and rules that currently exist that create problems for people who are dealing with just trying to live in their homes hasn't been addressed. So that's why I've made this one of my priorities for the past 4 years, not only trying to change laws, to protect the unit owners, but also creating, as you can tell now, the enforcement. It's almost like we've had to build this thing from scratch in order to provide protection for the most vulnerable. And it's sad to say that the most vulnerable are homeowners, the unit owners.
You have, and again, hats off to you. And, you know, here's the legislator, folks, who does understand, and if you live in Florida and can vote for him, you know, vote for him, please. He's on your side. And that's very rare, because I can tell you, I had Senator Mike Snyder from Nevada on, and I was telling him on the air about your program. And I said, Mike, this is something that you need to look at in Nevada as well. You know what his response was, Julio?
What's that?
Well, you see, Shu, there's something you just don't understand about people out west. You see, they don't particularly like government interference, so they wouldn't want a program like that. I could not believe it.
Let me state this for the record. You know, I am probably a rare type of legislator. I am a Republican by party, and I'm one that believes that, that more laws do remove freedoms from people. I'm going to agree with that. Less laws to me are more freedoms for people. But again, hear what I said earlier, and I don't agree with this gentleman. The bottom line is we're in place. Government is in place to protect also the most vulnerable. And that's what we're doing. This is not a matter about people, you know, not wanting government intrusion. And I agree, but there are times that government must step in when things are wrong. It is our job to correct them, to fix the situation, and to make sure that everyone is treated equally. So there's, I think, a misconception on what government should or should not do.
Well, I don't know if you read my promo, but anybody who did, I mean, I talk about government's function, which is to protect its citizens.
Absolutely.
And it's not just from, you know, it's not just from being attacked and invaded by the Canadians to the north, or, you know, the Aborigines from the south, the South Pole. It, you know, it's from any kind of foe out there. And government has created associations, let's face it.
That's correct. See, the current laws that exist in this state and in all states were created by a legislative process. So, and again, it's very simple. If it's got problems, it's our job to correct them. And more importantly, it's our job to make sure that everyone is protected.
And it sounds like this program is going to be a model program, and hopefully it's something that other states and other jurisdictions are going to be able to use and follow.
Well, this is the hope, that we're able to interact with other states that can, instead of reinventing the wheel, can see what we're doing. As you know, we've got a lot of groups here involved. We have Mr. Jan Bergman, you know, with his group, Citizens for Cyber Justice, and they're great at getting information out and networking with other states. But there's a lot of things in the pipeline that we're doing. I mean, one of the other things that we're dealing with this year here, which is something that we haven't spoken about in the previous years on your show, is the issue on how insurance is affecting homeowner associations, meaning condo and HOAs, with the incredible heights that everybody is seeing. That's something else that I'm working on this year, which is creating an atmosphere for condos and HOAs to be able to self-insure. I think it's going to be another wave of the future in how insurance will be looked at, because it's just incredible what the rate increases are. I know here in the state of Florida, we're in a current crisis where people's renewals have come in. When I say people, I mean the entire association's renewals come in 300%, 400%, 500% increases, and as you know, Shu, that's passed on to the unit owners.
That's right.
In the form of special assessments, and then of course raising the management fees, and that's not creating a very good environment for, especially a lot of the retirees that live in condos and the and these type of units that have associations with them.
I know there's been a whole lot that's been written about the insurance, and again, I applaud you. And I'm not sure, how do you, intend to get them to self-insure, how's that going to work?
Well, again, remember, we are the ones that are in charge of that, the legislators, both the senators and the members of the House of Representatives. What we're doing this year is we're going to attack the what we call the insurance legislation that we normally put into place, and we're going to make it very simple. We're just going to try to create opportunities where it can be very simple for a group of condos to all come together, pool their money, and self-insure. Just like any large company has the opportunity to self-insure, we think that at times it's going to save the money, it's going to keep people's management fees down, and more importantly, they won't be looking at so many special assessments. So it's just the way that we structure on what kind of opportunity and how easy we make it for these associations to self-insure. And the word is out. I mean, we communicate about our intentions even, months before we go back into what we call the legislative session. And the word is that there's a lot of interest because people are suffering dearly because of the new increases in the premiums.
Julio, what kind of oversight are you going to have? Because you're going to need, if you've got all these condos coming together and pooling all their reserves and their insurance money, then some, you're going to have some form of oversight, adult supervision, to make sure that it's still there when it's needed.
Well, in the state of Florida, we have an Office of Insurance Regulation. And honestly, what we're told all the time is we have probably the most, I'd say the strictest rules of we're very vigilant at times, even where insurance companies complain that it's just too regulated and too over-restrictive. So we think that we've got that already in place. It's just that we'll have to make sure that the Office of Insurance Regulation will do what they do normally, but now they'll have a new segment to look at, which is all of these associations that decide that they want to self-insure. But we have the network in place. We have the structure on how, we regulate the industry. And like I said, we've got some of the strictest regulations in the entire United States. So I think we're ready for that, Sue. We just needed to create another vehicle for these associations to be able to deal with this crisis called insurance.
Sounds like you're just going to be changing the way things are done, which is great.
Well, see, and that's the thing. You see what you just said there, changing? When we got these situations here, you got to learn to think outside the box. If you know the status quo for years hasn't worked, that's why it's imperative that we, as elected officials, look at this, jump into it, and start looking for solutions. Because if something isn't working, and it hasn't been working for 10, 20 years, I don't expect any miracles to all of a sudden make it work. It's incumbent upon us to make the necessary changes, whether it's an enforcement issue, whether it's the changes of the way that, that these associations manage themselves, or whether it's got something to do with insurance. It is our job to make sure that we resolve these problems for the people that call home one of these associations.
Okay, I'm going to go off on a total tangent and ask you a totally irrelevant question. Do you ever sleep? You have so much energy.
I'm glad you asked that question. You have two types of people down, and you know this. You probably have them, and you see them in your state. You have what you call politicians, and then you have what I call public servants. Unfortunately, they're all labeled politicians, but public servants, people like myself, God's honest truth, I'm in my office on Saturdays and Sundays. People tell me, you have no life. And, my response to that is, thank you. That is what I'm supposed to be doing. And you got to understand, when you take on the job of a public servant, which nobody twisted our arms to do so, you better expect that normally when people are available, their free time is usually on weekends or after 5 o'clock, and that's when they want access to their elected officials. And I'm one of those that enjoys it. I just love the interaction. But more importantly, what I enjoy is ideas that I get from citizens that just common everyday people. And, it's gotten to the point here where the state of Florida has adopted this new concept called the 100 Ideas for the Future of Florida. And you know what we're doing? A lot of times, us as legislators, elected officials, we come up with our ideas and what we think needs to be done to correct the problem. In Florida, thanks to an incoming speaker from Miami-Dade County, which came up with this idea. What we're doing is we're inviting people to come to forums who, for instance, maybe are on a board or part of a property management company or have something to do with insurance, or just that resident that has so many problems and more importantly has ideas for solutions. And a lot of the things that we're proposing are things that have been brought to our attention by just the average citizen who says, look, here's the problem, but I'm not just going to complain. Here's an idea that I have for a solution. And case in point, here's a new thing that I'm ready to take on this year. It's having pets in condominiums. It's become a hot potato down here in the state of Florida. As you know, there's a lot of retirees and elderly people that that live literally by themselves, and they only have the company, or let's say the companionship of a pet. And you know, it's got to be progressively worse when a board decides that they really want to be they're within their rights, but they're not using the human touch and
right.
creating situations where they're letting these people, pushing these people to either move or get rid of a pet, which, you know, I'm a pet lover, and to me that's like asking me to get rid of a family member. And I think that we've lost it, and it's a shame that we have to come into that. So here's one of the issues that we're going to be presenting this year is how do we make it easier for people to be able to create a pet-friendly environment in a building. You know, I've always said that majority rules, and if the majority of the people in the building decide that, yes, that they want to allow, you know, pets of a certain size in, and there's seven board members that don't, well, I have a problem with seven board members, you know, overpowering the majority of the unit owners. And we're going to deal with these kind of things. And these are the ideas that are brought to us by the average citizen, you know, in our state. So it's called government listening, and not us trying to dictate what we need to do, but getting ideas from citizens and then trying to enact it through legislation.
We're talking to State Representative Julio Rabino from Florida. Two points that I would like to make. Based on what Julio said a few minutes ago, he is always available. I can attest to that, even to those of us who don't live in Florida. Mm-hmm. I've got his cell phone number. I call him, and he says, hi, Shu. And every time I have asked him to come on the show, he's called me from the campaign trail, from knocking on doors. He's been on the golf course watching a golf tournament. I said, you know, Julio, we can do this some other time. No, you want me this time? I'll do it this time. He's always been there. And I also know that he does go around. You went around the state and held these hearings and for condo owners.
That is correct. And Shu, that was, again, about listening to people. You know, I can sit here and just deal with my problems because I represent, like I said, the city of Miami, the famous South Beach area, you know, Miami in general. But the thing is, the problems as a legislator don't just stop in one county. They affect everybody throughout this state and through all the different states in the United States. And what we like to do is to hear what, you know, one end of our state is saying compared to another end of the state. And these hearings that we had were incredible. Not only were they a learning experience, but more importantly, it was a way for me to take with me some great ideas that, again, it just citizens came in and said, Representative, here's a problem that we're having in the panhandle in Florida. And then guess what? We had found out that they were having the same problem down in the Florida Keys.
Right.
So the problems were the same, and here's the greatest part about it. They were also offering solutions. And since these are people that live with this nightmare day in and day out and probably have spoken to other associations or other condominium unit owners and said, what do you guys do so that this doesn't happen to you? See, that's called common sense legislating. They would tell you, look, this is what needs to be done. Let's try to create a situation where, you remember, not everything can be exactly the same for every unit, but at least to give people, through a legislative process, a chance to decide if they need to have these changes done. Even if a board is opposed to it, in order to be able to improve their quality of life and the environment that they're in. So it's common sense legislating, and the opportunity to have gone around the state of Florida and listened to every corner of the state to tell me this is what's going wrong was a great opportunity and a great learning experience.
That took you, what, about a year, didn't it?
That was about a year process going from one end. This is a pretty long and large state, Florida, probably one of the longest states if you look at the map. And it's a very interesting state where the demographics are very different, but the problems seem to still be the same. When you had problems of abusive boards and boards with actually no human touch for what these people were going through as unit owners. And let me just say for the record, because a lot of times people claim that we are too rough and it's only a small percentage. I will tell you, there's some boards that have great people and they work like a charm. God bless them and great and knock on wood, and I hope they always have that environment. But unfortunately, there's been a lot of boards where I've had a good situation gone sour, maybe because of a change of members or because laws are very loose and leaves things up more to the interpretation of a board that maybe is not as great as the other group that they had before. So what I tell people, you know, although I hope you never need us, there may be a time sooner or later where you're going to find yourself in an abusive situation. And that is where we need to change these laws and create the enforcement legs of this in order to deal with that.
I get calls from people, and, you know, they say, oh, shoot, you're not being fair because I live in an association and we just don't have those kinds of problems. And maybe they do, maybe they don't. Sometimes I know the association, and sometimes I know that they've been in the papers, and sometimes I've heard from the neighbors, and so I know they're having problems. It's just that they don't know it. But I always tell people that, you know, even if you're not having problems, you're one election away from things turning around.
Exactly. Well said.
And you've got the structure there. I mean, you know, the associations are so powerful that the structure is there. It's just a matter of who's on the board.
And this is something that needs to be, again, brought to the same level of attention as education, as I said earlier, in healthcare, because I'm going to speak now for the state of Florida. Development in this state of Florida, due to the landlocked situations that we're having in a lot of places, all that you're seeing that's being built now in the city of Miami is nothing but 15, 20-story condominiums.
Right.
So that's the future of this state, and
right,
probably will become the future of a lot of other states that are landlocked. We can't build out, but we're building up. Well, guess what that means? I've got about another 80 new buildings that are multi-million-dollar condominiums that are empty right now, people slowly moving into them, and eventually they'll have full functioning boards with budgets in excess of $1 million. That means potential, how should I say, problems.
Yes.
There's always temptation, to say the least. And more importantly, you got volunteers, and God bless their soul, that at times, let's not say they're not doing things maliciously, but they'll do things that, because they're not well trained, where in the past we've even tried to make it mandatory, the training, and haven't been successful with that. But you now create a situation or a problem that needs to be addressed. So I guess what I'm saying with this is the future of development is either in condos or homeowner associations, as we like to call them, the walled-in communities that have the common ground. And they are subject to having an association, which means problems. I mean, I don't care how great the people are, there's going to be mistakes made. And as you said, you know, problems could be only one election away before they start experiencing real, real nightmares within the association.
Well, many places, many jurisdictions have mandates, because what a great way to collect tax dollars and not provide any of the services. So, you know, even if the common area happens to be just a small patch of grass or just the streets, which could go into either the city, county, or state, or however it works out, developers are opting not to do that, or are building substandard streets and then making them private and then turning it over to the homeowners themselves and setting up an association to maintain it, which I think is sad. But and I think the American people need to say, wait a minute, we can handle this. We can go back to the way things used to be and come up with a different way of doing it.
And that's something that I agree with wholeheartedly. And another aspect that you know, that we need to look at that requires a lot of attention, going back to with the trend and what's happening. I'm not sure what happens in other states, but I know in Florida, one of the latest crazes and things that developers are doing, now that you mentioned developers, is what they call the lovely condo conversions.
Yes. And, oh, yes.
And that's creating a whole nother world of opportunities for us where we have to start legislating to protect the consumer and what they're buying.
Yeah.
Because I've seen hotels converted to condominiums.
Right.
I've seen apartment buildings that had no kitchens converted to condominiums only to be retrofitted with a full kitchen without updating wiring.
Yeah.
And I don't need to paint you a picture what happens next. All of a sudden you got people that have been removed. They've been asked to leave by the code compliance in their cities because they're living in a potential fire hazard. And that is just a number of problems that we are seeing because, again, it's just the popular thing nowadays is to build condominiums and homeowner associations, and the condo conversions have become another monster that we have to deal with here in the state of Florida.
Well, I think any time the real estate market's really hot, you see that. But the flip side to that is that the real estate market is cyclical, so when it cools, it is, as it is now, you're going to find that there are no rentals, and there's going to be a real shortage of rentals.
That's another big problem, Sue, we're having. The rental market is almost non-existent here in Miami-Dade County because every single apartment building that I knew that had some type of a week would consider affordable rent, nowadays the owners have been approached by a developer offering a one-time lump sum that they just couldn't say no to, and they're buying these buildings and they're turning them into condominiums. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't have the money that they need to be able to put that down payment, so they're ending up having to leave and going to find something else, which is very scarce, which is affordable housing in Dade County.
And that's nationwide. And then what happens is they turn into condos, and the owners decide they're going to put them on their units on the rental markets, and the condos come and say, "Oops, you can't do that. No rentals."
Well, this is, remember, that was part of a law that we passed.
I know.
At least we here in Florida stopped that. We went ahead and grandfathered and created a law that we worked on. I think it's been about 3 years now that gave people grandfathered rights on rental rights. If you bought with the right to rent, no board can change that in a condominium association. And I know the co-ops are calling for stuff like that this year also. And I'm sure there'll be other opportunities for other people to come forward asking for the similar type of situation. But we've got a bunch of other things this year we're going to deal with, which, is, again, we're going to go after legislation that would deal with the conflict of interest with board members, you know, having any vested interest in any vendor that does business with the associations. The reserves are going to be another issue this year. You know, we're here battling whether mandatory reserves versus non-mandatory reserves, and hoping that can deal with the problem of the constant special assessments. We're talking about legislating where only so many special assessments can be levied during the course of a year. We're also going to be looking at legislation that will affect the CAMs, and more importantly, the property management companies, which seem to be springing up everywhere like wildfires popping up in every corner, and a lot of complaints coming in that has to do with the property management companies. And then last but not least, the issue of liens. As you know, that there was legislation passed where certain fines could not be put on as liens in the homeowner association environment, and there's been a movement to try to remove that. And so besides trying to pass new legislation, we're trying to fight to keep in the books what we've done to protect consumers in the past.
We're talking to Florida State Representative Julio Rubino. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back, and it looks like our second half is chock-a-block full of even more great ideas from Florida. Don't go away. Stay with us. We'll be right back. WBR, Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and joining us on the Commons is the Energizer Bunny Rabbit. Hi, Julio.
Hi, Sue.
I'm tired just listening to him, and I thought I was a workaholic. Julio, we've got about 20 minutes left, and we have a whole lot of other things that we want to cover, and we're not going to get time to do it. So before we even get started, I'm going to invite you to come back and finish what we won't be able to do today.
Well, I would love to, because there are so many things that we're doing here in Florida, and like I said, I'm sure those that are listening can pick up on some ideas and run with them and take it to their elected officials and hopefully do what we're doing here.
Well, I think that what you're doing is great. That's a great model. And you were telling me before we went on the air, or maybe you were telling me off the air, actually, you were talking about local cities getting involved and passing their own ordinances. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. This is something that we just started seeing this past year. What has happened is we have an area very popular here, probably well-known around the world, called South Beach. That is the famous...
diet.
You got it. That's the South Beach diet, and where everybody's beautiful, but
yep.
The condo wars are not beautiful. It's one of the communities that has the most condominiums, probably anywhere in Miami-Dade County. They're on every corner. And they have a lot of problems. So what happened is we started getting calls from a lot of their local elected officials, meaning their mayor, their councilmen, asking us to come and speak to them about what we were trying to do at the Capitol here in Florida, because they were constantly getting calls about problems from their citizens, their local citizens. Well, what they decided to do after seeing that government is slow, but we are attempting, you know, so many steps every year, they decided to say, well, why can't we jump in? And although in the state of Florida, condominiums, and meaning the associations, are regulated through the state government, there's no law that states that local governments cannot create their own ordinances or their own local laws to make it even tougher for different problems not to occur, per se. And what they did on Miami Beach, or South Beach, as it's known to the world, they created their own task force of people, both residents, managers, non-managers, just regular unit owners, some of the elected officials, and they started having meetings on what they needed to do. One of the things that I like that they've done is they've created a licensing where you have to have a permit now if you're a property management company to do business within their city limits. And here's the greatest thing. Normally, if there's a problem with a property management company, and we have to take a complaint and work through it, I mean, months could go by before any action is taken. Well, here's a great idea. At the local cities level, or this city, Miami Beach, South Beach, they came up with an idea. Well, you know what? We're going to require an extra permit or license to do business within our city limits. If we get a number of complaints from any one building, at a local city level, they have the opportunity to pull a permit or a license to do business in the city within days.
Wow.
And that means all of a sudden now that property management company can no longer do business in there. So they've now created a quicker way to protect a building that has complained over and over again about a property management company. And that was a great idea. The same with these community association managers. They're also looking at what they need to do to make sure that notices are sent to, when a city notices the board on a potential problem, maybe a structural problem or an electrical problem, which in turn can mean that a whole building is evacuated. And a lot of this goes on with these condo conversions. You know, that was a problem. Well, they've come up with another great idea, which we're going to try to implement statewide, and that is that when a board, normally it's just the board that gets the notification, and we know that there's been times where boards don't share all the information with the people.
Yeah, that wouldn't happen, would it?
Yeah, no, absolutely not, they claim. But here's a chance for the city to send a notice to every one of the unit owners, and it may cost them a little more money, but not enough, because I think that what they would do is they would educate, or more importantly, inform the unit owners that your board is not doing what they're doing. Your building has got 60 days to clean up a structural problem or an electrical problem. And now that the unit owners know, they're going to turn around and they're going to make that board accountable. Unlike what happened here on South Beach, where the board had been getting notices for almost 6 months and was never even addressing an electrical problem on a huge condominium on South Beach – long story short, since nothing was being done, the unit owners never knew. They figured the board was taking care of everything. Well, all of a sudden, everybody was, they were basically removed for an unsafe structure. And you had people now that couldn't return to their homes for probably close to a year.
Wow.
The word was that there was, and this is only hearsay, and this is being investigated, some of the unit owners claim that the take there was a developer working in conjunction with board members not to maintain the building, to allow it to get to the point where now the city would come in and basically condemn the building. And you know what that means. The developer would pick up the building at probably less than a third of the cost.
You were talking about that once before.
That's a problem that we've been having, and there's a classic example. I'm not using any names because they love to sue you here in the state of Florida, but this is the situation, and that kind of stuff seems to be popping up where we have people going in and trying to buy the majority of the units and take control of an association. Shoo, we've seen everything happening, and you know what? Again, we're not saying that this is the everyday situation. But if it happens only once, we need to make sure that we offer protection. And we owe the protection to every single unit owner. So even if it only happens in one building at once during a year, we still are responsible for having legislation in place that will protect people and not allow that to happen. Well, these local ordinances will help us control the situations like this that go on at the city level. So I commend South Beach, or as we call it, Miami Beach, for doing this, and I hope that this is a trend that more and more cities will follow, setting up their own little task force and looking at it. Because remember, even local government is responsible for the safety and for the well-being and for the quality of life of all that live in that community.
I like the fact, I think, I just want to confirm, when you said they set up their own task force, that included not just managers, but also the unit owners as well.
That is correct. To be fair, they had a combination of a CAM, they have regular members of boards, non-members of boards, just unit owners, and even vendors have been invited to sit at this at these different types of task force, plus the elected officials, which are part of the board, because they're the ones that then pick up the recommendations and then they take it to their commission to approve what they call these ordinances.
I know what you do during your time off. You attend these meetings,
yes,
right?
I do. Unfortunately, I make it a point to travel from city to city and advise them of what they could be doing to help themselves.
Well, that's a great segue, because one of the other things you were talking about, one of the other points we were going to talk about, was conflict of interest. And, you know, here you were just telling us about allegations that board members were in cahoots with developers to allow buildings to get run down and condemned so that they could be picked up. And so that would be a conflict of interest. What are you planning on doing about that?
We've tried to do what they call a disclosure for a couple of years. I think this year we're going to try to bring the disclosure legislation back up again. And what that would do is, again, it would be just a very moderate form of disclosure. The problem is disclosure. What I mean by that is for these people to let us know who are they paid by. Do they have a business? What is that business? If it's a business that does lawn maintenance or does pool cleaning or does electrical work or something like that, and you're a board member, that you're not utilizing part of your company that you work for to do the particular work. What we've seen here in Florida is a lot of times, And most of the time, with a couple of phone calls, it just ceases. But what you have is somebody who may own their own property management company. They're a member of the board of directors, and they've got the contract to do the lawn maintenance. It's just that, you know what I like to say so that I don't offend anybody? It just doesn't pass the smell test.
Right.
And if it doesn't pass the smell test, it normally will bring some kind of controversy to one of the meetings. And those are the things. It's a shame that we have to legislate this. But it happens. That does happen all the time here in the state of Florida.
Well, it doesn't just happen in Florida. I mean, it happens here, too. I remember sitting at in a court case in court, and it turns out that the management company owned its own boiler repair company. in its own, you know, under different names.
We have the same situation here. We have companies that are under one name as a property management company, but right. they own little, what you call subsidiaries or
right.
satellite companies that do. Mind you, remember, here in the state of Florida, there's a law that says that they have to put it out to bid. Well, it seems like every time that the company that won the bid, if you do your research, all of a sudden it's an affiliate or satellite of the larger property management company.
Well, they get to see the other bids, too, because
exactly.
the bids
so
tend
they're
to come there.
Deciding.
So, right, so it's...
See, Sue, and that's the kind of stuff that it's our responsibility to stop that nonsense. And you know, it's just, it's improper, if not unethical, and might even be treading into illegal. And that is where these type of pilot programs that we spoke about will be able to look into this, where law enforcement will come out, where citizens will be asked to present the officers with documentation on what they see, what it is that's going on. And I'm telling you, if there is anything of criminal intent, charges will be filed. The whole situation here is that it's gotten bad. Temptation with the multi-million dollar operating accounts have gotten to the point where people are. We know the cases where people have been taking money, and we need to put an end to that. And this is the last other thing. I know we're very limited on time, of course. I just want to, again, talk about the issue of having pets in condominiums. We have a group here in the state of Florida, a grassroots group that started a petition via the Internet and by going to meetings and so forth. And I got to tell you, they have been putting that all around the entire state of Florida. And all they really want is fairness. They want an opportunity to be able to decide their future if you live in a condominium. And the way that they really want this decided is to at least give them an opportunity that if the majority of a building decides that they do want to allow pets, well, then they should have the right to do it, not just five or seven board members that decide they want to dictate what can and cannot be done. And I think it's only fair. That's democracy. That's the way it works. And that's just the way that we're looking at it. So we're going to be bringing up the legislation to look at pets and condos this year.
So what's the legislation going to do? I know that in California dealt with this a few years ago.
The current legislation that we have, what we're drafting right now, let me explain it. It's in bill drafting right now. We'll be expanding a little bit on what currently is law. Currently, of course, people that have handicaps can have certain types of pets. Those people have no problem whatsoever. We're not going to touch those. What we're talking about is we have a lot of communities in here, majority senior communities, and it doesn't have to be a senior age community. It could be any community, but what it is, it's nowadays, you know, there a lot of people, due to the high cost of a single family home, they're having to raise families in condos. And a lot of times part of that is a family may want to have a pet. Well, you know, as long as it's reasonable and setting the conditions on a manageable size pet, and that we will leave to the boards, but the thought of whether a pet can be brought in or not, what we're talking about doing in the legislation that we're drafting is allowing a 50-plus-1 majority of a vote taken to all of the unit owners to decide whether or not all of a sudden, even though that board has decided that there's no pets, if the unit owners manage to get the signatures and take it to a vote, then the bylaws will be changed, even without the consent of the board. So basically what you're doing is you're telling the people in there, you are the majority, you have the right to do this. If you manage to convince 50-plus-1, the majority of this building, then you will have the opportunity to change your bylaws with or without the consent of the board, and you will be a pet-friendly building. Now, that doesn't detail how the board then will decide what you call the rules and regulations of the sizes. We're not going to get into micromanaging. We just want to have people have a choice and an opportunity in a fair way on how this is done, the same way that nowadays we can recall a board. And by the way, on the recalls of board, now that I talked about that, we are also going to be looking at the simplification of how we do a recall of a board. This year has been an incredible year, at least in my office. I know we have helped people that have come with no knowledge, just a unit owner that hasn't had a clue on what they need to do to get rid of a board that they didn't agree with, and we've had probably in the neighborhood of 20 successful recalls, but it's a very tedious and tough process. That's another thing that we're looking at this year. I'm trying to simplify how a recall process will be conducted with the election monitors and stuff that we use through the Florida Ombudsman's Office. And I'll bring that to the end on the comments that I had, because I know you wanted to talk a little bit about the Ombudsman's Office.
Yeah, the Ombudsman, I think my feeling, having watched what's been going on across the country in terms of Ombudsman, was that this really wasn't going to work. Virgil Rizzo was the only Ombudsman that I had any hopes for, because he seemed to be doing what he was supposed to be doing, yet he was unceremoniously canned by the governor.
That is the right way to put it, and that is an argument that I've had with the governor, that we had somebody who wasn't a bureaucrat and was willing to speak his mind and tell it, as the legislature say, tell it like it is, but unfortunately that became a casualty of politics in Tallahassee. We do have the division, or in other words, the office of the ombudsman still continues. We have a new person that is now an ombudsman, which personally I will tell you that I've had no problems with as of right now. She's learning the process. She didn't have the experience that Virgil did, but our job right now is to continue to get them not only the additional bodies that they need, because, they're still doing a marvelous job. As a matter of fact, that whole ombudsman's office had an article written, and I believe it was the Wall Street Journal, on how this was a model program. And there's a couple in there, Bill Phelan and his wife, and they're doing a marvelous job, I mean, doing what they do best, which is educating people, coming out with the election monitoring, and a lot of things that they have done to overturn boards that were basically in place for 20-plus years until the ombudsman came in and helped these people help themselves. That's what I would say. Going back to Virgil Rizzo, it's a great loss. That's got to be one of the finest men that I've ever met. He's going through some very trying personal health issues right now, but it's really a shame that we had an individual that didn't mind standing up to the bureaucracy, but that's politics. We will work to continue his tradition and what he's done, and to continue to build the office of the ombudsman, but there'll be no replacing Virgil Rizzo.
What I really liked about Virgil, because he did come on after he was canned, and after he'd had surgery, he was flat on his back when he was doing the interview. It was very candid. I mean, there was none of this playing word games, nothing, none of the usual political mumbo-jumbo.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was that very candor that the DBPR couldn't handle.
And I would just tell you that I am a student of the Virgil Rizzo School of being candid.
You don't need to take lessons from anyone.
No,
you
don't.
Have always been candid.
Absolutely. That's why me and Virgil became such good friends, because I saw an individual who was willing to call a spade a spade, was willing to tell the state, you're wrong, this is the right way to go, and more importantly, stood up to the nonsense when there was nonsense in an association environment. I mean, he's going to be dearly missed, but he's not gone. As I want you to know, he will still stay on and talk to hundreds of people that will still contact him for advice, along with a number of other volunteers that we have that they're just a great source of information for people that need to know, what do I do, that are getting ready to now enter into a battle with their association. So Virgil will be missed, but he's not gone, and as soon as he gets better, believe me, we'll engage him again. We don't get rid of the good ones. We just go ahead and put them on another mission.
Well, there's an article here that I have, okay, let's say, first of all, that my guess is that it's the HOA industry that was screaming the loudest about Virgil, which means that he was doing a good job. And the question, the headline of this article is, did Rizzo cut into attorney's fees? My guess is he probably did, and
he did, and he did, as we like to say, big time. You got to understand that Virgil got to a point, and so did that office, that even the boards were no longer calling their attorneys for information or for guidance. And you know how that is. Every time a board picks up a phone,
right,
they get billed
right
by the hour by the
right
attorney. So, yes, I think that you have now hit the key nerve that was hit. He was a source of information for unit owners and board members, and CAMs were calling him asking for information. And guess what? That was taking money out of the pockets of a lot of attorneys. And I think that is what really set them off in creating what I call the animosity and the bad, that's what I say, bad campaign against taking him out. So that's it. You understand it well.
Julio, thank you so much for joining us. I always love having you. Your energy is great, and I just, my hat's off to you for all the programs that you've got going. And your willingness to jump in there, regardless of whether you get your bills approved or not, you know what's right, and you find a way to make it work. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue, for the opportunity, and just please keep doing what you do. You really help a lot of people out, and I count on you a lot. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Well, we still have a number of things, so I'm looking forward to having you back real soon.
It would be my pleasure.
Thank you so much, and thanks to all of you for tuning in. And be sure to tune in to On the Commons every Saturday, same time, same place. On the Commons was produced by LTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week.
Finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.